The following audio message excerpts were delivered on September 16, 1959, by Joseph Wesley Matthews to incoming University of Texas students who had committed to live and participate in the Christian Faith and Life community during the 1959-1960 academic year. The material preserves the original non-gender-sensitive language, which was then the social norm. This talk engages the subjects of freedom, community, covenant, symbol, genuine human relations, marriage, family, and friendship. The entire audio message is preserved by the Order Ecumenical Archives, Chicago.
Sometimes I find myself looking at a not me, who is a human being, and becoming bewildered as I am confronted self-consciously by a mystery. And when the eyes of my neighbor, the not me, I meet this mystery, I become at the same time acutely aware of the fact that I'm a mystery unto myself. I do not know how you experience your experience. I can never finally get on the inside of your internal history. You can never understand finally how I experience my experience, what it means to be this unrepeatable, unique hunk of history that on the outside you see is designated by a name, Joseph Wesley Matthews. I can let you in on some of my internal history, but only some. One thing that I increasingly discover about myself is that I live by symbols. I live by symbols. When I discover that I live by symbols, then I have known that all my life I've lived by symbols, though much of the time I lived, to use the Socratic term, as a pig, unaware of the deep symbols which laid claims upon my life. From year to year, I am conscious of these symbols changing. Some change a great deal. Some very little. Some symbols die away, and new ones are born. I shared with you on Monday night, perhaps most inadequately, the fact that at the moment, in this year of my life, for I think in terms of years, the term experimental has become a part of my internal history that helps me experience my experience, that enables me just a little further to understand who I choose to be in this world. To be an experimental man, for me, means to be a man who lives out on the edge of all the structures of life. This is to be, for me, a free man. To be a free man. I am concerned, deeply concerned, about being a free man. I suppose, at the moment, if you ask me what my deepest self-conscious concern is, I would say my concern is to be a free man, an experimental man. And to understand what it means for me to be a free mental man, a man who knows all the rules, and not abstractly knows all the rules, but existentially knows all the rules. I mean by that who knows the rules from his bowels out, and yet is bound by none. Who knows all of the rules through utter commitment to the rules, and yet is bound by none. I suspect, for me, the experimental man is always a paradoxical man. The free man is always a paradoxical man, a man who lives utterly involved in the structures of life, and at the same time, utterly unbound by any structures of life. It does sound a bit paradoxical, but I know no other way to try to communicate what I mean by the free man, or the experimental man, than that. We're an experimental community raising the question of how in the wide world can I get a life image by which I can live in this time. We're after this. And we're the kind of a community that's experimenting in the dimension of education and study. By golly, I liked what old Stoddard said tonight, that he had a nostalgia for knowledge. Yeah. What in the devil does it mean to be an educated person in our time? Few of us are educated. Most of us don't even know what it means to be an educated person. And here at the community, we're concerned with that. How in the midst of the pressures of this world can I learn what it means to be able to think for myself and do my own deciding as a free man? And we're concerned here to experiment with the whole idea of mission, for the whole idea of vocation. What does it mean to have a vocation? One day I show up in this world, and one day you're going to look around and I ain't going to be here. What in the devil does it mean for me to do my living and my dying? And you only ground the clock once, not twice, just once. What does it mean to mix the stuff of my being with what goes on in this mysterious universe? Between my showing up and my showing not up. Well, anybody's got an easy answer to this, you just stand up now. The whole world is waiting for you. I often say that any guy who doesn't have problems here, he ought to sit down and those cards to the whole universe tonight. And I, for one, want to be first on the list. Then we are concerned with experimenting with this whole idea of, I don't know what term to use. We sometimes have used life together, but I'm so demnable scared of this word togetherness. A few years ago, well, I am. A few years ago, it had some meaning. But today, the sentimentalists in the world have got it sticky again. Last night, tried to talk about this in a word or two in terms of genuine human relations. Yet, good Lord, the term human relations has got sticky, hasn't it? Well, anyway, you know what I mean. Here at the community, we don't know what it means to live together. As human beings, we know what it means to live together as pigs. We know this. But what it means to live together as free, responsible persons, we don't have any easy answers here, but we're concerned to push out over our heads into the depth and try to find out what it means for me to be a self before you and to allow you to be a self before me. Now, you better put your watch up here. Now, this is where I want to talk tonight, in this area. Sometimes it's better for a man to sit down after his introduction. If you thought this was my speech up to now, you're wrong. Now, tomorrow, we're going to talk about being a free man out on the edge here. And being a free man out on the edge here. And on Friday morning, we're going to talk, Friday or Thursday, tomorrow afternoon. Tomorrow afternoon, we're going to talk about what it means to be a free man with a vocation in this world. Tonight, I want to talk about this. You get scared anywhere along the line, that makes two of us. But I'm going to be dealing with things that's way, way out beyond my imagination, almost. Certainly, out beyond my embodiment. The problem of community is a problem. That sounds a little redundant, doesn't it? Well, brother, I think we can afford a little redundancy here. Community is a problem, and it's a problem for every damnable one of us sitting in this room. It's a problem in our times. It's a problem in our families. By golly, we haven't got any community in our families as we grow up. Oh, we lie here because it's so damnably painful. But I have suggested to some of you before that most of the students at the University of Texas come here and graduate from here without ever having had a genuine, serious conversation with their mother and father. Oh, I don't mean talks, but I mean those kind of conversations in which you pull off your mask and lay aside your role and dare to be persons and selves before one another. And I think not that that is any exaggeration whatsoever. This is a problem, hey, in our neighborhoods. I know the names and the vocations of the people on my street, but rarely have I met them as persons. It's a problem in our friendships. I know lots of people and have a... Golly, it isn't hard to know lots of people in our culture. We're geared to know lots of people. But I could count almost on my two thumbs those kind of relationships I've had in which I dared to be exactly who I am before you, and more important, dared to allow you to be precisely who you are before me, and vice versa to the whole process. These are rare. Friendship is rare. Human relationships in depth, are rare in our times. I say that the two practical problems on the college campus in America today is, first of all, this problem of vocation. I don't mean vocation in terms of how I'm going to earn my living. The problem is deepened greatly. But the problem of how I can be involved creatively in the processes of the times in which I live. How I can mix the stuff of my being in response to this brand new, overwhelming world that's hurling itself at us at the speed of light. Vocation in this sense. This, I think, explains this on-the-roadism, in which in the middle of every semester on every college campus in our country, students go. They go to Mexico. They go to Europe. They go to the West Coast. They go to the East Coast. They go to the Army. They just go. And the rest of us tend to go while we stay at home, by losing ourselves in Walter Mitty's as we read a paragraph and reread a paragraph and reread a paragraph. You know that as you sit at the table. Or else the pattern that begins toward the end of the semester in which students just start to sleep. Just stay in bed. Freud warned you about laughing at the wrong time. This is a problem in our day. But I put the next problem, and one closely associated to it, is this whole matter of genuine human relations. One of the things that makes this problem so obvious in our time is that I feel that the college student today is just through with what I call sentimentalism. That kind of human relationships in which some way or another you try to enter into a gentleman's agreement that you like each other, or where your fundamental concern is that you have some giddy feelings toward each other, or to put it in the social context of where your fundamental concern in a group is that there's harmony in it. This kind of sloppy sentimentalism, it seems to me, has been a mask for what it is for the serious college student in our day. The whole matter of understanding community in terms of a group of people that somehow or another agree with a series of doctrines or systematic ideas. Well, your college student is tired of this. Well, the free man may on this end be here, and on another occasion be here. Do you see that? He is always mixed with history, but his being is never finally determined by any relativity of history at all. Do you see this? This is the man who has understood that there isn't such a thing in this world as an individual. This is always an abstraction. And there isn't such a thing in this world as a community. This is always an abstraction. And an important abstraction for the purposes of analysis, to be sure. But what you have in actuality is simply a community of individuals or individuals in community. This is what you always find. You never found a community except it was composed of individuals, and you never found a community, you never found an individual who was not, when you found him, a part of some community. Another way of saying this whole thing is that in our day we're beginning to understand that man is not only a natural animal, he's a historical animal, and about choice whatsoever. This is a part of the givenness when we finally stumble upon our selfhood. We find that we're not only in nature, but we are just as necessarily in history. We're only in community, and outside of community, we are not. And yet, man is never finally synonymous with community. This, again, is the image of the free man. Now, how in the wide world are we going to think through what it means to finally see all of this and to embody this understanding in our being? Well, I must use an ancient category, a category covenant. Nothing magical about this category at all. You use your own. For I am interested in what the term covenant points to, not in any definition of the term covenant at all. Sometimes I call this a moral covenant, but that's unnecessary. This is a covenant. What do I mean by that? I mean, here is the kind of a relationship which one can self-consciously stand before the fact that he's a free man who is always in some community. And that whenever he sees himself as a free man, not in a community, he's not a free man. Or whenever he sees himself in a community as not a free man, he is not a free man and not in community. Now, covenant is the term that holds these two together. By covenant, I mean that relationship with other people in which I can genuinely participate in the structures of a given relationship and at the same time not lose my soul to this relationship. Mr. Vargas has that longing look. A married man, when you talk this way, always has this longing look. For marriage is fundamentally a covenant in which you self-consciously take upon yourself certain structures in relationship to another person, and at the same time do not lose your soul to those structures. Why covenant? I mean that relationship with another person or another group of people by which you can fully participate in this relationship minus nothing, and at the same time be a free soul in the midst of it. I see, at this moment, five problems here, or five areas that puts meat, flesh and blood on this. And this has to do with the freedom to enter a covenant, has to do with the freedom of deciding in a covenant, it has to do with the freedom to be responsible in a covenant. It has to do with the freedom to embrace guilt in a covenant, and it has to do with the freedom to divorce a covenant. Let me talk about these. If I enter into relationship to you for the sake of some task we have to perform, for the sake of some end, if it's a covenant, I enter into this by a decision of my own. And therefore, a covenant can never be any kind of external structures that are forced upon me, for by my decision, I internalize these structures within me, so that henceforth, the pressure of a covenant upon me is the inner pressure of my own decision as a free man. Now, let me enlarge on that. There was never such a thing as a community without structures. Now, structures may be implicit or explicit. To the degree that a community is not self-conscious community, to the degree that people who are married, do not self-consciously face the fact that they are married, the structures in that marriage remain hidden, latent, implicit rather than explicit. Whenever selfhood comes in a community, or to put this another way, whenever community becomes genuine, then the structures of the community become overt, which gives the opportunity to everyone participating in this community to make a self-conscious decision about submitting themselves to this structure. This is true in marriage, it's true in responsible citizenship, it's true in terms of being a genuine member of your fraternity, it's true in terms of relating yourself as a seriously free person to the university or any other kind of a social relationship. You remember our friend Kant. Some of you remember our friend Kant. Yeah, here's a free aside. Don't you dare get outside of this university without having taken some work in contemporary philosophy. And I don't care whether you're going to build bridges or sweep floors. Some of you remember Kant and his categorical imperative, which a man lived before a categorical imperative. But the interesting thing about Kant's insight was that this imperative was never from the outside. It was never a matter of Oak Cliff here, finally dictating my conscience. The categorical imperative was that which I delivered unto myself as a rational creature. And I was literally bound by it. But by being bound by that imperative that I took unto myself, lo, Kant was very clear, I became a free man. Therefore, when you and I enter into marriage, the covenant of marriage, if we enter into the covenant, this is to say, if we become free people in this covenant, then we make a decision whereby this covenant becomes my covenant, and it's a never a matter of that nasty old woman there, dictating bondage to me. Only when I lose my selfhood does this happen. This becomes me, because I've mixed the stuff of my being with it. Therefore, there cannot be covenant where the structures are not external and everyone has an opportunity to take upon himself explicitly the decision to become a part of this covenant. That's the first important thing for me. The second thing in terms of covenantal relationships with friends, family, nation, and whatever that's important for me is that a covenant is that which makes it possible for me to make my free decisions in the midst of life. What do I mean by that? In a covenantal relationship, one recognizes that structure is never an end in itself. You can have a contract, and then structure becomes that before which you are loyal. But when you enter into a covenant, your loyalty is not to the rules or to the structures, which say you go 30 miles an hour here and 50 miles an hour here. Your loyalty is not finally there. Your loyalty is forced upon you since that any structure at any time demands of you a self-conscious decision as a person. What do I mean by that? If you stay in this community, you are going to promise, for instance, one another that you're going to attend lectures on Thursday night, for instance. Now, what does this mean? Well, you have utterly bound yourself before your neighbor, before this rule, this dimension of a structure that's always present in human relationships. And yet, this structure at any given point means that you are confronted with the necessity of making a decision. It does not tell you finally what to do. Any structure that is a part of a covenantal relationship can never keep your conscience for you. It simply confronts you in such a fashion that you cannot help keeping your conscience unless you defy the covenantal relationship, which is to say that you make the covenant into a contract or into some legalistic mode of life by which you escape from having to live. When this rule confronts you with, you have mix the stuff of your being with a promise to come to a lecture. What this does is force you to make a free decision of yes or no. That is to say, a covenant is always both to keep and to break. Do you see that? Therefore, in any given circumstance, you can say no to your covenant by a free decision. What you cannot do is to say no by default. You can see the difference between a negative decision and a decision by default. For instance, two guys go off to the movies to escape tonight, you know, to escape study, to escape the burden of the problems of life they have. One of them goes by default, like a pig, and the other one goes by a self-conscious decision that the pressures at this moment are so much that the best thing for me to do is to hide from them. Do you see the difference? Both of them are sitting there in the movies to get away from life. One of them is there as a pig, and one is there as a person. Though from the outside, you and I cannot tell the difference. One laughs like the other, one cries like the other, but one is a pig and the other is a self. Do you see this? So that in deciding, for instance, that you will not come to a lecture, this is your own decision, but it's a decision over against the promise that you've made. And this means that it's a decision in the terms, in the light of other claims upon you in a given moment. For instance, if you and I are conscious persons, we know that we're never involved in one covenant. We're involved, hey, that's a good witness tonight. We're involved in innumerable covenants. Who says that I ought to be up here tonight? Who says that I should give my time and talent and energy here tonight? Who decided this? Good Lord, I got three boys at home with whom I've made a covenant that place a claim upon me. I've got a wife at home that places a claim upon me. My nation, with whom I've made a covenant, places a claim upon me. Oh, my, oh, my. How in the wide world can I choose this one and negate these? The covenantal understanding of life faces the fact that there isn't any easy solution to the problem of being a human being. Every time you affirm this human being, you negate these. But when you and I, as a responsible person, before an explicit covenant that we've promised, that we've mixed our promises with, then we make this decision in terms of other claims upon us. But not only is this true for the man who knows what a covenant is when he says no, it's also when he says yes. For in each situation, it's as if he gets married all over again. For he has to decide anew. No, I'm participating in the covenant. Tell you, lots of marriages go on the rocks because they haven't any understanding of this dimension of life at all that I'm trying to point to with this verbal symbol covenant, in which, lo, you get married every time that you make a free decision in relationship to this covenant. So that anyone who makes a covenant in this community binds himself to be loyal to the explicit structures, and yet a covenant, covenantal relationship is the kind of relationship that bestows upon you the freedom to decide in each concrete situation what you must do. But come next here. There's another kind of freedom in covenant, and this is the freedom to be responsible for your neighbor. For when you enter into a covenantal relationship with Cliff, it's not only your problem that you be a free man in making your decisions in relationship to it, but you've promised Cliff that you're going to be concerned about his responsibility. Hey, maybe I better stop and let you breathe three times. Because the last damn thing we want to do is to genuinely get involved in another guy's existence. We want to play games with him and keep him here. But to get into a situation where it's my responsibility whether or not he's responsible. Let me out. I'm going to be a beatnik. Lots of kind of beatniks in this world. To enter into a covenantal relationship means that I take upon myself the courage to be responsible for his responsibility and his irresponsibility. Later on, we'll talk about this more clearly. But this means, freedom means risk. I'm the kind of a little mouse that wants people to like me. Sometimes I think on some days if somebody don't give me hello, I would strip stark naked and stand on my head in the middle of Guadalupe just to get attention. Don't laugh at that. You'll make me uncomfortable up here. Somebody said last night as I spoke that my histrionics were such they couldn't hear a word I said. I resolved to improve, but I don't know just how. It's quite another thing here. To risk his attachment to me, acceptance of me, by questioning his own responsibility as a free man. And in a way, though, I never can do this, can I? because I can only confront you with your covenant up to the point of your own freedom. But you know, you can always tell whether you've got a free man. If, for instance, he sleeps through a lecture, and he's done this as a self-conscious free person, and I go in afterwards and I say, Cliff, heaven's sakes, you weren't at this lecture. And it's my responsibility to do this when I enter into a covenantal relationship. And if Cliff says, you get the hell out of here and mind your own business, then I know immediately I don't have a free man on my hands. The default was here. But if Cliff says, thank you, but I have to make the decision. I don't mean in these words, but thank you, but I finally have to make this decision. Then I got a free man. Of course, then that frightens me, because there's nothing frightens any of us anymore than to meet a genuinely free man. Huh? Well, let's turn this around. It's not responsibility for another person in a covenant. It's also daring to have the courage to open yourself to the responsibility that the other person must assume. Ooh, do you see that? I must be willing to bear myself, my inner being, to Cliff, to the extent that I allow him to become involved in my own life. There's only one thing more painful than getting involved in another person's life, and it's finding the freedom to genuinely allow another to intrude in our own. Huh, George? Huh? That's a part of what it means to be a free man. Oh, most of our life, we're spent in that box, you know, of Steig's cartoon where this guy's all crumpled up and saying, people are no damn good. Most of us, see, are really this man. We cannot open ourselves to be involved with other people at the point of their selfhood, and we cannot allow them to be involved with us up to the point of our own selfhood. And yet, right at this point, comes the whole problem of guilt in life. Huh? Huh? How do you handle guilt? Guilt is never a problem, never really a problem. It's just something uncomfortable until you know what it means to be a free person who dares to make a promise and a covenant with another person. And then guilt becomes a real problem. Yeah. One thing, you never have unambiguous evidence that you were a free man in any situation. Hmm? Huh? First of all, 7/8 of our motives are below the conscious line, aren't they? You and I are always suspicious of a guy who thinks he knows damn well what his motives are. Because we know damn well he doesn't. And you and I just better be quiet about what we think our motives are. But this guilt that you and I experience is not the guilt because we broke the law. Never this. It's not the guilt because we violated the structure. The guilt that we experience is the guilt at the point of our freedom. That in this situation, I do not have any awareness that I was really free. It's not because you didn't come. That isn't where your guilt is. It's because you do not have the courage to assume responsibility for deciding to come or not to come. Now, what a covenant means is that you dare to take responsibility for the guilt of being a free man. Have you ever noticed that when a person gets guilty over the covenant, you can spot them a mile away? Then they become defiant. Or else, they begin to knuckle. One or the other. You go back here to the Father one way or another. Well, we'll work more with this. The last thing here, and time for me to quit, the last thing is the freedom for divorce. Where there is not an open end to every covenant, it's not a covenant. It's not a covenant. Did you ever notice how the writers of the New Testament, when they're grappling with the problem of divorce, dance a little on one foot, and then they dance on another? And then they go, did you ever notice this in the New Testament? You read one place, you can't have divorce. And at the other place, yeah, there's got to be some room here for divorce. You ever notice that? This is the way the church has danced through history. We don't make fun of this. Brother, they were grappling with a problem. They were grappling with a real problem. When anyone takes his selfhood seriously and dares to enter into genuine relationship with another human being, there's always a dimension of once and for all in this. Not in terms of duration, but in terms of the total mixing of your being with it. Even though, I don't know how to put this, but you can sense after it, you and I have 4 million covenants. I don't suppose we have, we're such mices. But as selves, we could have 4 million covenants. And the string to enter into a covenant is to mix the total stuff of your being with every one of them. This is what it means to be a person. And to live with the conflict and the ambiguity that this forces upon you. So our fathers understood this. That, brother, when I say to this woman, I promise you, this is sobering business. And yet at the same time, only when it's possible to break a relationship, can this relationship be a genuine promise? And this is the ambiguity and the difficult perplexity that our fathers grappled with. And always divorce, this is in the marriage realm, in the political realm, it's revolution, isn't it? You ever noticed how our fathers, both inside and outside the church, danced back and forth about tyranny and revolution? An agonizing problem, isn't it? They even began to give you sort of corny, off-the-cuff solutions. My friend Thomas Aquinas, he suggested, and mark you, real wisdom in this. One way that you decide whether or not you'll stir up a revolution is to pretty certainly you can succeed. Otherwise, he says, don't do it. The problem, isn't it? And in our country today, yeah, ever since McCarthy, we've been scared to death to even mention the word revolution. And yet our fathers understood this when they, I don't know where they got the courage to revolt against the structures of government in terms of the British Empire. But they did. But this is always an ambiguous problem that the pig never knows even is there. Only the person, only the self knows it's there, and he knows it's there. Therefore, every covenant has to be open-ended. But nobody can tell for another person where the opening is. Do you see that? You cannot tell me ever when it's necessary for me to enter into a divorce in terms of my covenant. And I cannot tell you, and no one can say for another where that point is. But the point must always be there, or it's not a covenant, it's a contract. It's not a liberty, it's a tyranny. Therefore, any member of this community must at any time be free to leave. At any time. Though when this happens, it's always with great pain. To him, if he's a person, if he isn't a person, if he leaves as a pig, he didn't have any pain. But if he's a person, it's a time of great suffering. And if those of us that are left are persons, it's a time of great suffering and agony for us. If we're pigs, well, hell is good to get rid of him. But if we're persons, it's a time of great agony.